The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Texas Show.
It's the show that Mark Twain once called smarter than a blue jay, what can talk possum, and faster than a naked fat man riding a bolt of lightning.
So here's your plain-spoken, homespun host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. This is what we call Hour 1. In Hour 2, this is so crazy. We have the great Victor Davis Hanson coming up in the next segment. We're going to lock the doors and we're going to keep him through half of hour two. If you don't know who he is, folks, let me just tell you, he's a big deal. He's amazing. He's a visionary. I love him and I am honored to have him on this program. We're going to get the video up today. If you can share it with your friends, please do. Almost as good, in hour two, after we release Victor Davis Hanson, guess what? We're going to be hearing from Dennis Prager. Yes, now it's an encore because, as you know, Dennis Prager released a spectacular film about free speech, and he was deplatformed. We have Amazon Prime and Netflix both said this is too divisive. We're in a war, folks. I'm going to keep saying this. Like, this is sick that they would do that. So we're going to have him talking about No Safe Spaces. If you want to see No Safe Spaces, and I beg you to see it, I saw it and it's spectacular, go to nosafespaces.com. Yes. Nosafespaces.com. Use the code SAVE25. You will save 25%. Save 25. Nosafespaces.com. We kind of need this to educate ourselves as Americans. Speaking of which, before I give anyone else an opportunity to weigh in, the other day was the 18th of April. Today is the 21st of April. On the 18th of April in 1775, hardly a man was alive when Longfellow wrote his poem, The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere, or rather Paul Revere's Ride. That to me, as I've said many times, is one of the very greatest poems in American literature. We have challenged people to memorize that poem. I and my daughter memorized it about 12 years ago, and we've had a contest on this program because that poem speaks to where we are today. We have to look back to the existential crisis of 1776 and to the tyranny of George III to win the Civil War. And today, we have to look back to Longfellow and the Civil War and to the existential crisis of the Revolution to face what we're facing now, because we're in a different kind of war. I am not speaking hyperbolically, alas and alack.
You know what, Eric, yes. If I may insert here, I was watching the Andy Griffith Show last night, 1963, and they were talking about American history. And Andy himself was getting the kids excited by talking about, you know, the Midnight Ride. Exactly that. That's where it's, and of course, the new teacher becomes Andy's main squeeze through the rest of the series.
Name? This is Crump.
Yeah, something like that.
Like Crump.
They kept calling her Old Lady Crump, and then when he meets her, it's like, whoa, that's Old Lady Crump. Okay, and then they began the class with these like 6 and 7 year olds. They're doing the Pledge of Allegiance. I mean, it was just so beautiful. It was 1963 in America. Okay.
Well, that was isn't that great? I mean, look, Victor Davis Hanson, we're gonna be talking to him. He's a hero on this stuff. But I want to encourage people in my book, If You Can Keep It. I talk about this kind of thing. Now is the time to remember what battles we fought in the past, what wars we fought in the past, and what price we paid. People had to die. People had to be willing to die. People had to be willing to sacrifice everything for what is right because they believed in what is right. They believed in liberty. And Patrick Henry said, give me liberty or give me death. How many people would say that today? How many people would say death? No, I'm not interested even in the possibility of death. I'll stay locked down forever. Let the economy go to hell. We're in a very strange time right now. So I just want to remind folks to go to nosafespaces.com, educate yourself, use the code SAVE25. And Albin and and Chris, we've got a lot of things to cover. I don't want to forget, tomorrow, by the grace of God, I'm getting on a plane and flying through Chicago to Nashville because there's no flights. Because on the morning of this Thursday, I am going to be having a conversation with David French about whether Christians can vote for Trump, whether Christians should support Trump. That's the Q conversation. You can register to watch it. I hope you will, because I think this is going to be an important conversation. There's tons of other important stuff. Whenever our friend Gabe Lyons puts on a Q conference is just loaded with interesting stuff. Lecrae is going to be there. Tim Keller is speaking. John Tyson is speaking. Yeah. And a host of others I can't even remember. But yes.
Yeah. You know, when a pastor, for example, says like, well, Christians shouldn't align with one party or another, I have to think about William Wilberforce, who seemed to be aligned with one party or another. And he made a significant change, I think, you know, about was it slavery, something like that over in England?
Well, but this is the weird thing. He was willing to work with the other party, but he didn't pretend that he could avoid politics. And this is where we are now. I mean, if you understand what is happening, a lot of people don't understand. Some don't want to understand. But I think if you understand what is happening, then you understand what is at stake. And you're willing to vote for somebody who got married more than once. Maybe. But let me just say that it's not Reagan's fault that his first wife dumped him. Let's be very clear. I also guess I want to talk about what is coming up. I'm going to be talking to Stephen Meyer. Some of you know Dr. Stephen Meyer. I've had two Socrates in the City conversations with him. We're going to be talking to him either this week or next. I'll talk to him this week, but I don't know when we'll air it. I've got a conversation with James Tour that we haven't aired yet. Some absolutely amazing guests. The people
and there's a possibility for Friday. Possibility, Candace Owen.
Say what?
Yes, for
Candace
Friday.
Owens, get out of here.
No, Albin. Seriously. Yes, seriously.
I love that woman. I know that she's already married, and I'm already married. But I just want to tell you, that woman is a hero. That woman is, I hope, going to like run for governor of Connecticut against the man who's now in office. That's just terrific. Candace Owens is just another hero at a time when we need them. Can we talk about patterns of evidence?
Yes.
You have the text on that?
Oh, sure. Patterns of evidence. They're one of our sponsors, by the way. A terrific, terrific series that you can watch. There's one on the Exodus. There's one on Moses. And the narrator is Tim Mahoney. Now, Tim Mahoney's been a guest on this show. In fact, if you go back into our YouTube channel and the McTaxis Talk website, you'll be able to see the interview with Tim Mahoney.
I'll explain that we, it's kind of like the situation with you hear the sirens here. It proves that I'm in New York. It's similar to the situation with No Safe Spaces. There are these films that, you know, during a time like you're thinking, what can I watch with my family? I would say, what should you watch with your family? Patterns of Evidence, The Exodus. Okay, that's the first one. There's a whole bunch. But I was privileged to be at the premiere. I conducted a conversation afterward with Gretchen Carlson, Dennis Prager, and Graham Lotz. So that's included when you go to Patterns of Evidence. You can go to patternsofevidence.com. In fact, you should go to patternsofevidence.com. But there are important things that we need to be aware of, and we wanted to make you aware of that. Patternsofevidence.com, and of course, nosafespaces.com. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, folks, hold on to your hat. I'm talking to the great Victor Davis Hanson. I hope I don't talk too much. I also hope I'm not tongue-tied because I respect him so much. And after that, Dennis Prager. We'll be right back.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring, bound by wild desire.
Hey there, folks. Welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show. As you already know, because we told you in the previous segment, we have as our guest someone so famous that all we have to do is pronounce his three initials, and most of you will come sprinting to your radios. VDH, Victor Davis Hanson. For those of you who didn't know what VDH stands for, is my guest today. I want to say, folks, how happy I am to have him. If you don't know who he is, he's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution and has written innumerable wonderful books. He's been a professor at Hillsdale College, a professor of classics emeritus at California State University. Victor Davis Hanson, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Eric.
Listen, you're one of these people that you're just fun to talk to. So it's a challenge for me to steer things. So how about if I let you steer things? We are today going through a particularly complex kind of crisis. Give us your thinking on where we are with regard to, let's just say, the balance between liberty and safety. If we can put it that way, the balance between freedom and death, to reference Patrick Henry, it seems to me that's the real conversation.
Yeah, I think we were doing pretty well in balancing the obvious panic that occurs from a possible pandemic in a democratic society. And then somewhere around a week ago, we started going in the wrong direction. And I say that on two or three criteria. Number one, at the very time that these antibody tests started to appear, we had one yesterday at USC, we had a Stanford one on Friday in Santa Clara, we had these incidental reports from the USS Roosevelt, one from Germany, one from pregnant women that were admitted in New York, hospital in Chicago. It pretty much showed us that the denominator of cases that was divided into the numerator of deaths was way off, and that the once taboo subject comparisons to the flu were, in fact, at least in the case of lethality, legitimate. In other words, not two or three people are dying per 100, but more likely one or two per 1,000. At that very time, then, it should have lessened the paranoia, but the exact opposite.
Part of the upside of my own ignorance is that many in my audience will be as ignorant as I of some of these things that you've just said. So let me ask you, you say about a week ago, are you saying that what you just said, which I consider huge news, was not reported on? I don't remember.
No, it wasn't that it wasn't reported on. There were things that were going on with antibody testing in Germany, and there had been an earlier test in Finland that was actually a positive test rather than an antibody. And there had been anecdotes, but then there were these very careful Stanford and USC studies that came out, and there's more planned. And what it shows, I think, if I could be fair to the evidence, is the modeling was, as we knew, exaggerated, but was completely wrong, because the virus apparently did three things that they had not anticipated. It got her earlier than January 20th, probably. It was much more widespread, more quickly than we thought, and it's not as lethal for the general population. It's pretty deadly for people with medical conditions over 65 and in places like New York City that has almost half of all the deaths. But that should have sort of said to us, whatever we did in 2017 with when we suffered 60,000 deaths, you can critique that and say we should have locked down then and we shouldn't have, but we're going through apparently something similar, maybe a little bit more severe.
I'm sorry. What when you referenced 2016?
That was the last severe flu season we had, with 60 million cases, million hospitalizations, 61,000 dead. And we didn't do what we did now. And we were not supposed to reference that because we were told that this would be 200,000 to 2.2 million. But it seems that with these antibody testing and social distancing, we were very controversial about the degree of warm weather. Now, there's some studies coming out last week that suggest the warmer the weather, the more the COVID-19 virus reacts like the common cold or influenza. It doesn't exist as long on surfaces or in the air when the temperatures get up to 75 degrees or 80. So what I'm getting at is, Eric, that this should have been a time when people took a deep breath and said, we've inflicted 22 million unemployment, probably we've destroyed $5 trillion in liquidity and GDP. And look, we're all human, we're not gods. So let's just take a deep breath and start. And instead of what happened, we had all of these governors, we had these bureaucrats that were arresting people for church services. They were arresting them for in a solitary lake or pond, being on a boat. They were arresting people at the beach. They were arresting people for supposedly subversive comments about spreading false news, as we heard in New Jersey. And at this point, I think what we're seeing is a blatant admission that the whole issue has been weaponized. And by that, I mean, it's basically now we've come down to the barricades, and the left says, we didn't do it with Mueller, we didn't do it with impeachment. And the longer we're shut down, the more likely a severe recession, the more likely Trump will be Herbert Hoover in November. And if he undoes the lockdown and puts us back, then he's a mass murderer and he can't win either way. And I think that's pretty much what I gleaned from reading the New York Times or listening to NPR or MSNBC.
Well, let me ask you, just yesterday on this program, I had Diana West on, and she went so far as to say that she felt that Trump had fallen for the trap set by the resistance, so-called, to shut down the government. In other words, that from the beginning, this was intended to cause great harm to the economy. I wasn't sure what to make of it when she said that. What are your thoughts there?
I can see where she's coming from, but I don't agree, because I don't think that politically or medically he had a choice. Had he done this earlier, that is, announced a graduated return, he might have had Fauci or Birx resign. But most importantly, he didn't have any antibody tests. If those antibody tests had come out and suggested that, in fact, there wasn't very many people who had developed previous immunity, and the lethality rate really was 3 to 5% per 100, then he wouldn't have had any basis. But now that where these studies are coming out and it shows you it's comparable to the flu, he has the political ammunition, so to speak, to reassure the American people. Because, Eric, it doesn't really matter what you say or I say or Diana West says. Ultimately, the people decide. By that, I mean, if he says, let's go back and return to work, and people say, well, I just saw this antibody test and they said there's hardly anybody had it before, and there really is three people dying in 100. And that could be 10 million Americans someday. And I'm not going to go out to eat. I know it's legal, but I'm not going to book that flight. I'm not going to have friends over for dinner. I'm not going to take Uber. I'm not going to go to a concert. The economy can't recover.
Right.
So he's got to create two things. He's got to create a climate, a political climate where it's legal to do that and encouraged to do that. But he has to create a cultural, social, psychological climate in which somebody is not afraid to do what they should do. And I think we're getting to the point that he's achieved that. And it's kind of like we're at the point of no return. If you talk to economists, if we go into June 1st, then we're going to not get out of a recession for a year or two. So it's kind of like a slingshot. We're all the way back, and we go any further back, it's going to break rather than go back, send a projectile. And I think that's what we're hoping, that when we put the paddles to the economic patient, it wakes up rather than dies.
Well, and I guess I'm also wondering whether just because the way economies work, we've already passed some points of no return in that we cannot bounce back. In other words, that there are things that are going to have to play themselves out, and that this is in a way, I mean, I guess I'm hearing that even if we were to restart the economy today, there's a recession. So I'm more worried about a depression. It seems to me so horrific. If you have businesses, restaurants closing, the ripple effect, it could be, you know, unlike anything we've seen in our lifetimes, for sure.
Yeah, I think I share that concern, especially in the medical side, because I live in a very impoverished rural area. When you see the number of people who have not gone to the dialysis center here, federal dialysis center and state, and when you go to a cardiology appointment, which I did the other day, and it's empty, and the doctors are laying people off because people are afraid to go out, that's aside from suicide, substance abuse, child abuse, spousal abuse.
Okay, forgive me for cutting you off. We're going to go to a break. We're going to be right back, folks, with Victor Davis Hansen. Don't go away.
Hey, folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss, like, playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Heroes and role models have always been tremendously important to me. In my new book, Seven More Men, I tell the uplifting and inspiring stories of Martin Luther, George Whitefield, William Booth, George Washington Carver, Sergeant Alvin York, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and Billy Graham. Each of these men had the courage to surrender themselves to a higher purpose for the sake of others. Become acquainted with these seven incredible heroes and your life will be immeasurably richer. Order your copy of Seven More Men today. For more info, go to my website, ericmetaxas.com.
Snow, cement, and ivory on towers. Someone called us Babylon.
Hey, folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. Hey, guess what? I've got Victor Davis Hansen. He's in a bunker someplace at an undisclosed location. Victor Davis Hansen, do you tell people where you are? Are you
yeah, like no.
I want to be home because I see books.
This is the house I grew up in, and it's 20 miles southwest of Fresno on a farm that my great-great-grandmother homesteaded in 1870. So I have never been anywhere in some sense.
Holy guacamole, 1870. Yeah. You know, in America, that's pretty impressive. Actually, I shouldn't say in America, in California, the idea. Yeah.
I thought it was pretty impressive, but as a young man and as an adult, I lived in Greece 3 years. And when you go there and stay places that were built in the 13th century, then you get a little humility.
I was just going to say, my family is from Cephalonia, one of the Ionian Islands.
Yes, I've been there a lot.
You're kidding.
No, it's famous for its dried fruit, figs and raisins.
I'm a little staggered. You probably said this 2 years ago when you were last on this program, and I forgot it, but Cephalonia, the reason I read your book, Who Killed Homer, is because I've gotten involved in Mycenaean archaeology on the Ionian Islands. They have discovered the tomb of Odysseus, the tomb that Schliemann failed to discover because he was looking in Ithaca and Jorge Dorpfeld was looking in Lefkada. And so we could talk about Cephalonia and the Greeks for a long time. In fact, I'd love to talk to you about the Greeks and who killed Homer and the values of the West. Maybe we'll get to that. But to get back to this absolutely, parochial issue of the coronavirus, it's important. Let's go back to what you were just saying. You said in the previous segment that there are new reports out whereby this virus can, in fact, be compared to the flu. Now, what amazes me, actually, is until you've just said this to me now today, Tuesday, I hadn't heard this. I mean, I'm following the news. That's huge news. It seems to me that Trump or one of his people would have floated this, that somebody on Fox News would have floated this a little more.
Oh, loud. They did. They have been talking nonstop since Friday. I think Dr. Ioannidis was on, another good Greek name. He was a professor at the University of Yannina before he came to Stanford, beautiful city. And he explained to Mark Levin, and he's been on Fox and a lot of other people associated with him, and Michael Levitt and others. And now the USC team have been giving notice. And what they find is that they go into just a scientifically adjusted population base, and they try different testing to make sure they're not using one kit that's inaccurate for antibodies, and they find 2 to 4.5 or even close to 5%. Then they do the math on the population that might be infected in that county or that locale based on the sampling, and then they say, you know what, the cases that we're using to determine the lethality are underestimated by a factor of 40 to 80 in California. So when you use the numbers they come up with, the virus, I know it's a coronavirus and it's not an influenza strain, but when you look at the number of people in California who have died from it per the number of people who were infected, it's like a flu. It's 1 to 2 per 1,000. And we had been terrified. Remember Gavin Newsom said 25.5 million at the lethality rate of 3%. You were talking, you know, you could talk easily about 1 million Californians that were going to die in early May. And now that's not true. And I think that's created a different psychological climate and helped Trump get back. The question that you raised, whether it's too late, is a good one because it is psychological. If people are not afraid and they want to spend their stimulus money, gasoline is cheap, interest is cheap. There's plenty of stimuli to create a 1946 feeling that the war is over and let's go celebrate and let's get out and give ourselves a needed pat on the back. But that's a psychological question as much as anything. I don't think that small businesses are yet extinguished. I know they're dormant, they're comatose, but if they could get back in the next 2 weeks with federal help, I think they'll rebound. But okay, if we stay till June, it won't happen.
We've got two issues here, two enemies, so to speak. First of all, the Chinese. The question in my mind is, to what extent have they been nefarious? Not whether they've been nefarious, but simply to what extent? And is this, as my friend John Zmirak wrote, Red China's Pearl Harbor moment? Did they want to strike a blow to the West, to the economy of the West, so that in their zero-sum game geopolitical mind, they would rise, we would fall? What are your views with regard to China and Trump's willingness to take them on as a Cold War or lukewarm war enemy?
Well, everybody's arguing whether the wet market was a ruse to hide the fact that the virus either accidentally or deliberately was leaked. I don't think that's what we need to concentrate. I'd look at one pivotal moment, what the left calls a teachable moment. And that was in January 23rd, they locked down Wuhan, the Communist Party. By that, I mean you couldn't go in and couldn't go out. We allowed them from Wuhan to come in. They had direct flights to LAX and SFO and Kennedy. So in other words, think of that for a minute. They were calling us racist a week later when we finally locked it down. After for 8 days, they knowingly allowed people from ground zero to come to the United States when they wouldn't let them go to any other city in China. And we have to ask, why would they do that? Was it deliberate?
I have to go to a break. I want to follow up right there. We'll be right back, folks, with Victor Davis Hanson's The Eric and Taxes Show.
When the deep purple falls over sleepy garden walls and the stars begin to twinkle.
Hey, folks, I'm talking to Victor Davis Hanson. Dr. Hanson, let me ask you this. You just said something that I've heard a number of times, that the Chinese government did something that seems to me like an act of war by allowing people to fly from Wuhan to the United States. They must have known what they were doing. It seems to me clear that this virus never emerged by itself in a wet market, but that they did use that. That seems clear. The details are a little fuzzier. But, I mean, how is this not an act of war if what you just said before the break is true?
Well, I think in some ways it is, because they even compounded that sin by saying, you are racist on January 31st for not letting people from Wuhan and other places come into your country. But we're not racist, because we knew it was very dangerous for anybody after January 23rd to fly to our cities, but we didn't care about you people. So we allowed our people to go into your country. And what was the reason? We think that you're inferior people, you didn't care. That's the $64,000 question. I think there's a legitimate hypothesis that they said something like this. Well, maybe it got out of the lab, and maybe it's a disaster for our brand, and maybe we can control it if we shut down the city. But you know what? At this point, we're at Armageddon, and just let this SOB go out and let it go out, and other people are going to suffer like we do. That's the good take on it. The bad take is that it was more predetermined. But what I'm worried about is this, Eric, that we all say that we have to decouple from China, and I agree. We all say that China is a communist dictatorship. Yeah, we knew that. Some people apparently didn't. But it's a wounded monster, and they're very dangerous. And I think that a U.S. company, if it next week says, I want to decouple my ventilator company or whatever it is, they're going to lose the factory value. They're going to lose their capital. They're going to get expropriated. And they're not going to be able to take anything out of China, number one. I think they're going to gradually absorb Hong Kong. We're already seeing that now, this week, that they're cracking down on Hong Kong. They've already renamed these islands around the Spratly Islands, and they've renamed them with Chinese names. They've already violated the no-yield international agreement not to test low-level nuclear weapons. They were doing that last week. So what I'm getting at is it starts to look like they're saying, you know what, we're enemy number one in the world, and there's no way we can appease these people because we killed everybody. So that we'll see how tough they are and how all of this humanitarian sound when we crack down on them, because we have nothing but contempt for the postmodern West. And that's what I think we're looking at in the next month or two.
I'm very sorry to agree. Let's go further. If they are the enemy, what do you make of the idea that the New York Times 2 or 3 days ago had as a headline that Trump was going to use China as a scapegoat to politically avoid being criticized himself? What do you make of the fact that folks like Pelosi and Schumer are holding American businesses hostage to their cynical political ambitions to get $100 billion of their garbage inserted into something that was meant only to use the American taxpayers' money to save American businesses? It seems to me that we have enemies at home, and I never in the past would have said it so strongly, but I've never seen anything quite like what I'm seeing today in the press and in the Democratic Party.
Yeah, you're not seeing anything, because you'd have to read some kind of Orwellian novel to believe that Pelosi could go into Chinatown in San Francisco on the 24th of February and invite people to come in 3 weeks after the Trump travel ban, then blame Trump for being lax. Or de Blasio could tell people to go on the subway and then attack Trump for being lax. And the reason to answer your question is twofold as it involves China. One, the left at some point early on in the Trump administration, if not during the inauguration, decided that he posed an existential threat to the progressive agenda and to all of their cultural sensitivities, and therefore any means necessary to get rid of him, 25th Amendment, Emoluments Clause, voting machine suits, a veritable coup to wire the assistant attorney general, Rod Rosenstein, et cetera, were justified, including Mueller impeachment. So we know that they don't feel that they're acting unethically because they feel that if Donald Trump is deposed, his presidency aborted, he's not reelected, then that was a moral act. And we know the left has a propensity for the ends justifying the means. The second thing is they, in their view, China is not like Russia. Russia is a dictatorship, but it's part of the other. It's not a white, so-called white country. It's a leftist country. It may be a Stalinist country, but they have, I'm just talking now as a former undergraduate at UC Santa Cruz and remembering all the posters of a cherubic Mao Zedong waving to you and young kids from Beverly Hills and Palos Verdes wearing those Mao caps with the little red star. So they've always had a propensity and a naivete about China. And so they don't, when we say Chinese Communist Party, they don't think Soviet, Brezhnev, Putin was a former KGB. Right. They don't make that comparison, even though those are valid comparisons. That Putin, I don't even think that Putin is as scary as a Chinese because he doesn't have the apparatus or the organization that filters into society.
I don't think he begins to compare.
No, I don't think so
Chinese. I don't think...
He does only in one sense. He's got 7,500 nuclear weapons and China's got about 1,200. But other than that, Russia is a failing country. And one of the sad things about all of this is we forgot what Henry Kissinger said. And that was, I think that was in the 60s. We want to make sure a foreign policy never makes China feel that it's closer to Russia than to us, or Russia that it's closer to China than to us. In other words, we need to play the two off against each other in a realist fashion. And when we got paranoid about Putin and we demonized Russia after appeasing it during reset, we lost that tool in foreign policy. And we've brought the two together.
Forgive me, we've got to go to another break. Folks, I'm talking to Victor Davis Hanson. I hope you will share this interview, the video that we put on YouTube on the Eric Metaxas Show with your friends. Unfortunately, this is very important. We'll be right back. Hey there, folks. I hope you're enjoying my conversation with Victor Davis Hanson, because we've got another 20 plus minutes with him coming up in hour two. So don't think that we've concluded that just because I'm talking right now. But just a couple of quick updates. Albin and Chris, I don't want to forget to mention, to thank our sponsors. Folks, you know everybody's going through a tough time. I want to make a particular point of saying thank you to Mike Lindell at MyPillow.com. I wanted to say thank you to our friends Pete and Seth Talbot at Relief Factor and HonorBoundCoffee.com. And to remind you, if possible, to order from MyPillow.com now if you need anything. And please use the code ERIC or Metaxas. Mike Lindell is just, he's a hero. He's the real deal. And I hope you can order something from him for a friend or a relative. Just go to MyPillow.com and use the code ERIC or Metaxas. You get a huge discount, okay? So that's why I say that to you. Anyone can use ERIC or Metaxas. You'll get that discount. And also want to say Honor Bound Coffee, 100% of their profits. 100% of their profits. HonorBoundCoffee.com goes to helping military families. That's crazy stuff, folks.
Yeah. We want to thank Communio as well. Communio has a great thing for husbands and wives to during this
saving
time of
marriages.
Yes.
Using local churches to save marriages. God bless the folks at Communio. Yep. They're new friends. Absolutely amazing. I want to remind people also that I'm going to be traveling tomorrow and Thursday, and there's a QFIT conference coming up. If you didn't know about it, David French, who's a famous Never Trumper evangelical, he and I are going to be having a conversation at the Q conference on Thursday morning. If you're not registered for the Q conference, I mean, it's probably worth registering because there's so many other spectacular speakers put together by my friend Gabe Lyons. We just had his wife on, Rebecca Lyons, talking about her wonderful book. Nobody does what Gabe Lyons does at these Q conferences. So check it out. And I'm going to be having a 27-minute conversation. For them, that's like 6 hours. People normally get like between four. I think they give Tim Keller like 9 minutes or something. So this is kind of important, talking about Trump and evangelicals. I hope you'll check it out. Anything else we need to remember?
Yes. Chris's lizard. Chris wanted to tell
Chris,
his lizard story.
What's the story with this lizard?
Well, the quarantine, I think it's like creating a diamond. You know, a week is like 1,000 years or whatever. I don't know. There's a lot of pressure. So long story short, we got a iguana under this familial pressure a few days ago, about 4 days ago. My 9-year-old Maxfield named it Gawain, after Gawain the Green Knight. And sad to say, we woke up yesterday morning and Gawain had passed on. Our reptile friend died. We're not really sure what happened. We think maybe he got an infection. We haven't ruled out the COVID, but it also may have been dropped once or twice.
How about just getting your money back, dude? Come on.
The pet store said they would take the body back and keep it in the freezer and send it to the distributor and do a little,
post-mortem.
Did you do the Monty Python thing? This is a former iguana. Did you do the whole thing?
It's funny. I did mention that to my wife because my daughter was like, well, you've got to make sure it's not playing dead because they're known to do that. So I put it in the shower, ran some cold water on it, and it was still dead.
It could just be a very, very good actor. Did you ever think of that?
That's what I was thinking.
We have to go to a break. I just got huge news. I'm getting a haircut today. That's all I will say.
Wow.
Yes. Yes.
Congratulations.
You should video it. Anyway, when we come back, Victor Davis Hanson and Dennis Prager. Stick around.